from Austin, Texas to Essex, England. Welcome back to the Armchair Apex Podcast, everyone. I'm your host, Andrew Dalton. With me once again are my two co-hosts. First of all, we got Mr. James Lingy 12 Lingfield. How you doing, buddy?
I am very good. I said in the before we start recording, it's my challenge today to answer this question at the start of the podcast and not bring up the weather. Because literally every single episode we've ever done, I start with, oh yeah, it's hot today. Oh yeah, it's cold today. So that, there has to be more going on in my life than that.
You actually brought it up, but you brought it up again by bringing that up. So
yeah,
that's the paradox. And from Houston, Texas, Mr. Aaron Morphin Time, Morphew. What's up, buddy?
Just dealing with impending doom.
Okay. Well, you know, just a little lighthearted introduction for you here after the Spanish Grand Prix. What if I call you Morphin Time for the rest of the time we do the show?
I don't feel like whatever I say in response to this is going to matter to if you do or don't.
I mean, actually, it would. I mean, if you were like, I hate that name, I would maybe do it one more time, but I would stop eventually.
Morphin, you can call me Morphin whatever time. You want.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming to you after the Spanish Grand Prix that just took place in Barcelona, Spain, at the Circuit de Catalunya. And you know what? We're going to say his name, George Russell.
Say my name.
George Russell. Hey, say my name. Huh? What is this, Breaking Bad?
Say my name.
We're saying his name, and I'm going to say it right now. We'll get to the results shortly, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, but I just want to get this out of the way first. Is we're going to say his name now. I'm going to say his name.
Say my name.
Think he's earned his spot for me to say his name for the rest of the remainder of the season. We'll see what goes on next season, but for now, I'm saying his name, Mr. George Russell.
Say my name.
Showed up in Spain this weekend. Not that he hasn't in the other ones, but I guess enough to actually start using his parentally given birthright. Anyway, Verstappen pulls out another win, and we got some faulty engines from the Ferrari boys. Actually, it was a pretty good Spain. I was surprised. I was pleasantly surprised. We know that this is a track that will basically test your ability to bring the right setup. James, you were mentioning earlier that one of the teams maybe guessed on their setups, which probably wasn't too far off from reality there. They didn't have great results. But this is a track that's going to test your tire management skills and how you approach your track positions and things like that. I thought it actually delivered a little bit more than that this weekend with what unfolded. I had a fun time watching this race. What did you guys think?
I've never really understood why people thought it was such an awful track. I think it's like, I mean, granted, like I you know, I'm a newer fan of Formula One, but I don't think that it's ever really been that boring. I think that the TV direction is ultimately what's made it pretty boring and processional. The TV direction kind of moving to focusing more on the midfield and the other things that are happening were fantastic. Yeah. I'm here for all the midfield coverage as long as it's not from a drone.
Oh, that drone was so bad. What plucky intern trying to move up in the world's idea was that? Honest to God. But no, I mean, what you say about the track, I think really that was a regs issue. You know, the weakness of F1's turbo hybrid era was the medium speed corners. You know, you could not follow medium speed corners. And this, I don't want to go on about the regs again because I know I've done that every episode so far. But I, you know, it just shows the regs have worked. You know, the way that Max could follow George for so long, you know, that would not have happened last year.
I'm glad we brought up the drones. They just kind of looked like, have you guys seen Jaws 3? Remember Jaws 3, the one that took place at the theme park? And they show, it was like the 3D Jaws where like they would show the Jaws vision. They would they would try to do like the view of the shark as he like approached the non-suspecting swimmers off the beach. That's what that drone looked like. I was just like, am I watching the drunk camera from like GTA 4 where you would go like drink with Nico Bellic? And then all of a sudden you're like, and I'm just like, why is this camera so bad? It just looks like they strapped an iPhone 6 to it and then flew around. It's like, we don't need this. We have helicopters with large cameras on them. I didn't even notice though, were the helicopters there this weekend? I mean, we had chopper shots, right? I was trying to look for them and they never showed them when I was actually looking for them. But yeah, we've got choppers. We don't need the drones. That's fine. Cut to something else. Hey, cut to like more data or something like that.
The usefulness of the drone shots, like they would never be able to fly them as close as you would need to for the drone shot to actually be like really cool and not like sickening to watch. There's no way that they would like that Formula One would allow the drone to be that close to the track. So it's just like really far away, really wide panning shot, and honestly, like a little stomach churning.
Yeah, they just flew around like the same spot the whole time. And it was like, what?
Just same corner.
They're just like, okay, well, we're going to go up to the last chicane and then we're diving away again. And then we're just turning in circles. And it was just like, what? Okay. That's so pointless, you know?
It's also bad luck that they covered probably the worst section of track on the whole F1 calendar. Like, if you're really going to try out this technology, don't put it at the last chicane at Spain. You know, it's a terrible, like, clunky car park of a sector.
But they have like other layouts. I guess they use the same chicane. They can't. There's no way they do that for MotoGP, right?
No, and I think the reason why they have to use this layout for F1 is because there's too much speed. You carry too much speed going around. You would carry too much speed off the last turn, and if there was contact, I don't think the barriers are capable. So,
no.
Oh, safety! Oh, world's gone mad. Snowflakes.
It would just be another spot for Carlos Sainz to end up in the gravel. So somehow, dude, he did it again. And I was just like, man, are you again, bro? Like, what? Can we chill out with, are you, dude, do you love the gravel? Hey, are you Ernie from Billy Madison? You fallen in love with the wall or something? Like, why are we always in the gravel? But perhaps the worst problem this weekend for Ferrari were the engine putt-putts, the little engine going putt-putt. And after six races, I believe they want them to last for seven, correct? And this was sixth, and it didn't look like it's going to last to Monaco. I'm guessing they'll switch that out. Do you guys know anything about the Chuck engine issue?
Turbo and MGUH failure.
Oh, wow. Wow, both of those at the same time, huh?
Well, I mean, they are connected. I mean, honestly, the disappointing part about it is that this is the first race that Ferrari's brought upgrades to, and we didn't actually get to see where it put them.
No. We probably could have gotten a little bit more of an idea had Carlos Sainz not decided to go in the gravel again.
I don't think that was Carlos Sainz's fault.
Well, it still ended up there.
Because everyone, like, I know you guys watched, I don't know, did you guys watch the Sky broadcast or the F1 broadcast?
I watched F1 TV.
I was Sky.
It's the international audio, so I don't know, that might be the same commentary. I'm not
sure. Yeah, it's the same commentary. But as soon as Carlos went off, they were all just immediately just like, ah, oh, he does it again. And then Max does it, and they're like, must have been a gust of wind. Like, give my boy a break.
Yeah, it was a gust of wind for Carlos too, right? It was wind.
Which, interestingly, like, this track, they talked about the wind all week. Does Williams still have problems with the wind? Is that why they were so awful this year?
Oh.
Or this race?
I think that was a setup issue again too with those guys as well. I don't think they got it right.
Carlos recovered quite well for having gone off.
Bet, definitely.
I mean, Lewis was, 30 seconds behind the field, and he would have outscored Carlos had he not have had that apparently it's a water leak issue. You know, was that that good a recovery, considering Carlos's teammate was going to cruise to victory, you know?
Yeah.
Like, maybe I'm being a little bit harsh here, and I don't know whether he was carrying damage from the incident or something, but I think we're now, six races in, and I think now there's trends appearing in the season. And Carlos Sainz being way off the pace of Leclerc is now becoming a concern. I mean, the only race I can think where he was way on the pace, probably Bahrain. And since then, he's been quite consistently off it. And if Ferrari want to take it to Red Bull, considering Checo has been in relatively good form, you know, Carlos cannot be making the mistakes he's making. He has to be further up with Leclerc.
Well, so Bonato actually came out and said that Leclerc is running a far more aggressive setup on the car than Carlos is capable of handling.
Ooh.
There's a big disparity between, well, I mean, it lends itself to his driving style. His driving style isn't taking the car, you know, is on the edge as Leclerc does.
Yeah, Carlos is really into the oversteery cars. Like, he really likes the oversteery cars. He feels like he has more control. He's definitely more of a control the throttle or control the turn rather in the rotation with a throttle driver, and kind of the opposite with Chuck, right? So it's sort of that issue that Max was seeing with his other drivers too, where Max prefers a much snappier car. Those two guys prefer snappier cars. And maybe that has a lot to do with why they're always so far ahead of the field. I don't know what the deal is with Checo. I don't know what his preference is. He seems to be able to fairly wrangle at anything that kind of comes his way. But yeah, Carlos is definitely more of a, like, I'll turn it with my foot kind of guy.
It was very disappointing to see Leclerc have such a commanding lead, and he would have won the race by a million miles had he not run into the engine issues. So I really feel like Ferrari took a step in the right direction.
Yeah, there might be a good point to be made that he would have ran. I don't know if he would have ran away with it. I don't know what the margin would have been there, but he definitely was able to make those softs last till about lap 21, which actually might suggest that he was on a two-stopper, because Hamilton was also on a two-stopper. Or I'm sorry, Hamilton was on, he stopped three times, I guess, because he had to pit. But he stopped the lap 22 for mediums and then lap 48 for softs. Leclerc pit lap 21 for mediums. So everybody that stopped on lap 21 was on a two-stopper, it looks like. So if he was on a two-stop, there's actually a good reason to believe he might not have actually been able to win.
I think because he was leading, he was just sort of covering off whatever Max did. When you've got a, what, 8-9 second lead, your strategy kind of doesn't matter. I think he, you know, there's no point putting yourself on a different strategy than the car behind you. Just cover off whatever the guys behind you do. But it looked like they sorted out their tire wear gremlins, because in Imola, Leclerc got away and Max caught him because of tire wear. It happened in Jeddah as well. It seems like a bit of a theme of, and Miami, it was a theme of the Ferrari. And if they sorted that, then I think it puts the advantage back in Leclerc's hands. He was saying, actually, Leclerc, that he was far happier walking away from this race with no points than like Miami or Jeddah, where he was off the pace.
Interesting.
I think that's why this weekend was such a kick in the teeth for Ferrari. This was their chance to, you know, really hit back, and they've ended up losing even more points again and the lead of the championship.
Yeah, that's a good point, because that's a late stop. That's a late first stop for this race, just at least according to the rest of these guys and where they stopped. Their pit windows look to be about lap 10 to 17. And so, yeah, maybe they did fix or figure out at least to make some good headway with their tire management, because that's kind of their weak spot right now. That's their Achilles heel, is their ability. That's kind of the weak spot with, I'm not sure actually with Alphas now that we're saying that, but maybe that's their weak spot. It's definitely a weak spot with Haas, is their ability to manage tires. And apparently call correct strategy at this track, but it's definitely an issue for the Ferraris more so than Honda's, that's for sure. Red Bull strategy, Max, Checo 1-2. We were talking about this Sunday. A couple of frustrating instances for Sergio. The first one being getting caught up behind Russell and Verstappen and their little tiff that they had. What was that? Lap 20-something? Their little tiff. He wanted to get ahead of them while they kind of sorted their stuff out. I think they were on different strategies. Sergio and Max were on different strategies anyway, so I definitely understand that frustration from him. I understand Sergio's frustration with all of those calls. I mean, I don't think he'd be a Formula One driver if he wasn't pissed off that was happening. I think that's to be expected. Was it that surprising to me to see Red Bull call the strategy the way they did at the end? I don't think so. I don't know if they could have played it any other way, but I definitely understand Sergio's frustration with that. What do you guys think about that?
If I were Checo, I would have been frustrated with this as well. The first time that he came up on the back of the Verstappen-Norris battle, he was pacier than both of them, and he said, "Hey, I'm faster, let me through." And if they had let him through, he would have been way on his way to, you know, being ahead of both Russell and Verstappen, and likely would have been able to, you know, maybe split the difference between them and Leclerc at the time.
I completely agree. I think that's, for me, more egregious than what happened at the end, because there was, if anything, a tactical disadvantage for Red Bull to not let Checo have a chance at Russell. You know, ended the race as well. Like, they're under no threat from anyone. They could have been fine to race, but I mean, to not let Checo have that chance, and the gap between the two of them is not massive in the championship. If Checo would have won this race, I think the gap would have been about 12. So yes, Max is obviously the superior driver, and yes, Max is obviously the title favourite out of the two of them. But I think it's wholly unfair, race 6 out of 22
now,
to put in team orders like this.
I'm more sympathetic to the situation where he's behind these two cars battling and wanting to go on, especially being the other driver on a different strategy. I feel like that's the biggest thing, is I'm on a different strategy. We're not exactly matching strategies here. Let me go on and get on with it and make as much time as I can, because we're running different strategies anyway, and we'll see what happens at the end of the race. So that's where I feel most strongly about it. I would like to see if Red Bull has any comments on that. Did you guys see them talk about their strategy at all?
There was one very small thing that Christian Horner said. He said something like, you know, they couldn't see the rise in temperatures, the rise in engine temperatures. And he tried to play it as a little bit of a management decision. But I mean, look, Christian Horner is the king of spin. You know, is I don't trust him, but that's true.
Yeah, he's probably the best one at spin, huh? Out of all of them?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Benato's pretty good, too. Ferrari's pretty good. I don't know if, you know, I don't know if you're what you're seeing with Ferrari's public relations face is always what's going on behind the scenes. But Christian Horner has not seen a camera he does not like. So he definitely uses the media to his advantage for sure. He's definitely read Sun Tzu's Art of War. Let's put it that way. Like the dude knows, he knows what he's doing. And it's probably not, you know, the most realistic depiction of what went on. But I mean, regardless, they came out with a 1-2. I guess they played it right in that regard. That's a good point about it being race 6 out of 22. Maybe we let them race a little on race 6 out of 22. Mm. And so that's a good point. I haven't thought about it like that. That's pretty good. I guess I'm just not surprised really with the end result and how it ended up, especially definitely in their favor. So at the end of the day, I feel like you can't really knock it that much because they got done what they needed to get done. There was a tweet we were talking about. It's pretty funny. I think Jarno Otmir was talking about how that was a masterclass from Verstappen. It's impressive to see. We're audio only, so you can't see the gesture that Aaron just made from that tweet. But it was interesting how he called Verstappen and Hamilton's performance masterclasses. I guess I can see that in a little bit of a way, seeing that he did win a race going in the gravel once and then without DRS for half the lap, which also got to add, so funny when they were like, hey, man, you closed the DRS yourself. And it's because he's like, because I hit the button 50 times and they were just like, yeah, man, don't do that.
It was kind of exciting to hear them on the radio just be like, yeah, just hit the curb. See if you can wiggle it loose.
What we're going to do is we're going to hack this drone and we're going to get it to fly into your rear wing. And that will be the most useful use of this drone. Useful use. Cool phrase. That will be the most useful instance of this drone.
How stoked would you guys have been if it showed Max's pit stop and a guy just comes out with a mallet?
Yeah.
Well, I was so disappointed because it happened to Alonso a few years ago and someone just literally, his DRS was stuck open and someone just banged it shut.
Yeah.
And I said to my family, they're going to do that. And the camera didn't show it. The camera was too angled down because I don't see why not. Surely you just have one guy just like, what's the worst that can happen? It's not working anyway.
Yeah, I don't
just
see why not either.
Hit it, you know, turn it off and turn it on again.
That would definitely be like a job for the backup rear jackman. Cause you guys know, right? There's like a front and rear and then they have backup front and rears for both, right? So, cause they have like a whole just a platoon of people out there. The rear jackman should also have like a holster with a sledgehammer. That's just bam, and then takes it out, earning that paycheck, baby. I wonder what the backup rear jackman makes. Cause I know that their front and back make somewhere north of 150,000. A year, something like that. Oh, yeah, baby. I looked up the salaries for all the crew members. There's a guy, which I don't know what his role is during the rest of the week, but I do know that his role in qualifying and during the race is to suit up just like the rest of them and hold a fire extinguisher. And he is the fire extinguisher guy, makes $75,000 a year to fire extinguisher in pit lane and decked out in full garb. I was like, oh, and it just goes up from there. That's the lowest earner of the pit crew. So like, yeah, all those guys, pit crew, stuff like that, mechanics, working all the guns and whatnot. Yeah, they're making a decent, but they're eating good is what we'll say. We'll say that.
Well, the refueling person who doesn't even come out of the garage makes $350,000 a year and gets a $2,500 bonus every time they win.
Oh, dude, that's got to be the greatest job of all time. I wonder if he, if the real refuel, what is his technical position? What's it
refueling
called?
Refueling person is what it says.
that's like the job posting on Indeed is just like,
his name's, Jerry Can. I know him. Thank you. I'm here all week.
Tip your bartenders. Yeah, just, we're looking for a refueling person. Oh, what's the technical name? Oh, it's just a refueling person. That's the name of it. That's it. I wonder if they do anything having to, I wonder if they, because it's the same. Do they mix their own fuel? I guess is what I'm trying to ask. Do you guys know if they mix their own stuff? Because that's pretty interesting.
What is in the back, like water just, white? Yeah, you got two guys. Just put that in. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I wonder if they just have their own, because they all have to use the same, right? It's the same company making just like the tires with fuel.
It might be the same per engine.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure.
Everyone has, like, I don't know what the differences are in, like, the formulas of it, but everyone has a fuel partner. So, like, Ferrari's is done by Shell, and Aston Martin's is done by Aramco, and it's just, like, it's so on. And, like, Gulf, it does, like, they're partners.
We should break that down. I should get some info on that, because that's interesting, because they all have to use the same fuel, right? It's got to be the same mix of stuff, which I think so. Yeah, I think the fuel's definitely got to be stock, at least to a certain extent. It's got to be certain ratios of things that I don't know what it burns on. Dreams and magic, I guess. The tears of vegans, maybe. Sebastian Vettel's tears. moving on. What else we got? Mercedes bringing upgrades to the track this weekend. Hamilton falling back pretty early, obviously, and watching him just tick back up the leaderboard throughout that thing. It was really interesting because he did this thing again where he has these like super, like he'll get down on himself, almost like this weird, like sulky kind of like despondent deal where he'll have a radio message where he almost just sounds like broken, where he's just like, why even go on? You're just like, hey man, you're Lewis Hamilton and you're in a race car. That's why you go on. Like, what are you talking about? Keep driving the car. And then he drives his ass off to like P4 or whatever. I don't have the results. I'm sorry.
He was P4, but he had to manage the issues. He dropped back to P5. But I think that was a sign of his shock at their performance. Because, you know, the if he's in the W11 and he's 30 seconds behind the field, he's still the favorite to win because that car is just so ridiculous. Yeah. But, I think he thought he was in a midfield car, and at least in Spain, he wasn't. You know, the sort of analysis showed that his actual pace was good enough to challenge Verstappen for the win, depending obviously on track position. But, you know, like let's say he's behind Russell. Russell lets him go and holds up Verstappen. Lewis has got a, I don't know, 5-6 second lead. And I'd like to see that battle. But yeah, it's good to see Mercedes back, I think. You know, good to see Russell and Hamilton have a car that they can battle with, you know?
Yeah. It should really be a situation where it's like a high school house party where it's like, oh, you two, come on in, man. Yeah. It's okay. Yeah. Leave your sketchy friends out there, but you two can come in. Corey, you're good. You know, just have everybody. I think the more people up front is definitely going to be funner for the racers, funner for the teams, definitely a funner experience for the audience.
P2 constructors?
Yeah. Man, if they are actually, that would actually rock if they were able to be contenders so quickly after just not for like the first five races, for 5-6 technically.
I feel like it says a lot. Like the most well-funded team on the grid did not give up on that design. They could have easily just switched back, but they were just like, no, we're just going to keep working and we're going to make this work because we know it's there. We know it's there and we're going to solve it.
I haven't seen much about their floor redesign. I'm assuming that's what they did, correct?
There was a lot of parts. I think front wing end plate, floor. I think there was a little bit of side pod as well. There was lots, but they were like, we've changed lots, but we haven't changed much at the same time. Mm. Like it's the same car, but just tweaked. Because they're not porpoising anymore, and all of a sudden they're this fast on the straight. But you go back to Imola when he couldn't overtake, you know, Pierre Gasly, and all of a sudden, you know, what an improvement.
I thought it was super interesting how Hamilton would have been on pace to actually contend for a race win there. Like, wow, seriously? Because looking like a washing machine on wheels 2 weeks ago. So what's going on? Pretty wild. It is interesting how, and we'll talk about this later, I guess, how Aston Martin is not following Mercedes design technically at a glance, being that they do have the same power unit, but they're kind of running a hybrid system between what their car was at the beginning of the season and then more of a downwash type side body.
Before we dive into that, because there's a lot to be said about the green Red Bull.
Allegedly. Please don't get a seed, man.
Allegedly. That flavor is good, by the way. That's a good red. Yeah. Green Red Bull is delicious. I don't know if they were talking about green apple. I don't know if they had cans of green apple in the pit lane, but if they had cans of pear, oh, holy support that pear, delicious. pair Red Bull, I open a can and I pour it on my tongue and it has a little party on my tongue and then it goes down my, it has a little party. Pair Red Bull is delicious. That's all so I have to
do
say.
Think that Hamilton and George. Oh, God damn it. I said his name.
Say my name.
Yep. Instead of editing it out, I'm going to put it on a delay. I'm going to run a delay through it so it just delays and echoes and amplifies 80 times.
Do you think that Hamilton and the other Mercedes driver are on for a podium?
A podium? I mean, George got a podium.
Oh, I'm sorry, for a win?
A win. Yeah, it's just written in the stars, isn't it, that Lewis wins in Silverstone, isn't it? And you hear that thing we always used to be sick of, that like, get in there, Lewis. What a drive, mate. You know, one more time would be cool. One more time.
I think that would be cool. First of all, his name is George Russell, and we're saying his name. Say my name. I should get a soundboard, and I should have the Heisenberg say my name.
Say my name.
You know what? I would be happy with either one of them taking Silverstone. I think it would be a very super sentimental, pretty rad thing to see Lewis take Silverstone again, especially at a season that might be his last. This might be his last season. I don't know if we know yet, but it very well might be. So I would be happy with both those, honestly, not to be too diplomatic. But now that we're bringing him up, let's talk about George and his racecraft. James, you had mentioned earlier when we were chatting about this after the race that this is the first time he had shown his racecraft in his career. I don't know if I completely agree with that, but I think it definitely is one of the first chances we've gotten to see his defense in a car that looks to be heading towards the front again. And I guess time will tell, but he pulled some pretty, I thought they were interesting moves down the first straight, where that's kind of arguably the only place you're going to see overtakes on this track, with him kind of pulling over the side. A lot of people said that was moving under braking. I don't know if it was. Brundle didn't know if that was the case at all. He was also skeptical of that claim, which I assume he knows a little bit more about it than I do. He did have some interesting defensive opportunities there. I thought they were pretty interesting, even if Max was, you know, smashing the DRS button 87 times. So, yeah, James, what do you think about his performance this weekend?
I mean, yeah, I was a bit unfair saying this is the first time we've seen his racecraft, but I think this is the first time we've seen his racecraft when it matters, when it really matters. You know, I think he was known as Mr. Saturday, and he'd often get himself in these good positions. And I know the Williams was bad. I'm not expecting good results, but he'd sort of get in these positions, you know, slowly creep back down the field and end up in P15 again. And I think that was our concern for his position at this seat, where you're going to have to defend, you're going to have to attack. He hasn't really had to do this. You know, most people go from the back markers to the midfield to the front, and he's skipped the middle one. And I thought he drove really well this weekend. You know, some of the defending on Max was really impressive in a slower car. And I think it really bodes well for the rest of his F1 career. He's been fantastic the middle season. He's the only driver to not place outside the top five all season. And that is just so impressive, like unbelievable consistency.
Yeah. What are we pulling up, Aaron? Are you pulling up Imola? Yeah. Are you just pulling up Imola from last year?
Excellent racecraft.
Just
okay. Okay. I'm not.
just a collage of him bopping Bottas's helmet. Just
there's pavements on my way to work that are wider than Imola, so I'm not counting any incident at Imola. That is a cursed racetrack.
Oh man.
I don't think that he was moving under braking. I think he was very much within his right to make his one move down the straight and then adjust to go through and take the apex of the corner.
Yeah.
I think that's perfectly fair what he was doing.
Kudos to Sky for actually cutting to that shot. And obviously it's the right one if you're in the director's chair for that broadcast. But, you know, going to Max's T-cam, showing that defensive move, and then cutting to the overhead shot once they actually turn the apex really gave you a cool vantage point to see, you know, what it takes to defend on a corner like that. He's shown some great maturity this year. I think he kind of always has. Maybe arguably, though, if we're thinking about it, maybe his second chance to show racecraft when it matters, if we're considering secure 2020. So he showed some pretty good moves there. Granted, again, he was in a rocket ship that time too. So there might not have been a chance for him to do a lot of battling, but I think that was kind of the first glimpse. I don't think it was as comprehensive as this race though. I mean, this is definitely something where he's in the mix and fighting for a podium, then ended up actually getting it. But Sakir was definitely the point where we were just like, okay, well, this kid's for real. He's not just like good in a Williams. He can actually do it. One of you guys added, Bonato said that Monaco would really suit the Mercedes.
They said it was good on traction, which massively helps for Monaco. But, you know, it could be Ferrari mind games.
Coming this fall to Cinemax, Bonato mind games. Fridays at 2 p.m. That's a weird time for a TV show, 2 p.m. Anyway, how weird would it be if Monaco was a qualifying battle? Because I'm gonna guess it's still going to be a procession. But if it was a qualifying battle between Mercedes and Ferrari, and Red Bull didn't have it that weekend, I don't know if that's going to be the case. I got nothing to base that on. But just going off of the potential with Mercedes at this point and where they might be this weekend, that would be pretty funny. Especially if that's correct, where they are better on traction, there's a good chance that this Sunday might be pretty rainy. So maybe that will be definitely put to the test a little bit more than we assumed.
I don't think that you're far off with that. The Mercedes car seems to be considerably faster at slower speeds, regardless of the fact that this hasn't been a very strong track for Hamilton ever. I think it's going to be a pretty good qualifying performance for them. They'll line up perfectly well right behind Valtteri Bottas in P1.
What? Hamilton won 2019, right?
Yeah.
And then was it Verstappen in 2020 or was it? I forget. I don't have it in front of me.
We didn't race in Monaco in 2020.
Yeah, it was 2021.
Oh, we didn't. Right. Oh, that's it. We didn't do a 2020, dude. That's why I was watching Haas's Instagram. And they're like, Kevin Magnussen's last qualifying at Monaco in 2019. I was like, what are you talking about? I just dead ass forgot the pandemic happened. That's cool.
Wish I could do that.
I wish anybody could do that. I guess I did when I saw that post at 5 o'clock this morning. We'll see. Monaco will be fine. We'll get to that a little later in the episode. You guys wanted to talk about constructors, P4 in the constructors.
Yeah. I mean, just sort of, I'd say I want to talk about it. I more just want to ask, like, what's going on? I have got no clue who is leading the race from P4 in the constructors. Because really, I think there's six teams that could get it. Haas, Aston Martin, they suck. Alpine, AlphaTauri, McLaren, Alfa Romeo. You know, any one of them could get P4. And it's so good to see that. You know, it seems so track dependent. I think some teams will be let down by some of their sort of B drivers, you know, Zhou, Danny Rick, and a certain German who I think we're going to come to at another time. But it's so great to see how close they all are in that battle.
We're really looking at a situation where the teams from fourth down to eighth, all of the results have been driven by one driver. McLaren is currently in P4 with 50 points, and the lion's share of those are Lando Norris. Alfa Romeo, 38 of those points are Valtteri Bottas. Alpine, 32 of those points are Esteban Ocon. And they have 34 total. And AlphaTauri, I think, might be the second worst car on the grid. I think this is a battle between Alpine, Alpha, and McLaren. I don't think Haas or AlphaTauri have a reasonable chance.
I think Haas, you'd be surprised. I mean, K-Mag was, what were they in quality? What, P8, P10? Two cars into Q3. And they were running. I mean, if Magnussen pulls off that move on Hamilton, they're what, P5 and P7? You know? And yes, they might have fallen back a bit. I think Magnussen wouldn't have fallen back as much as Schumacher. But don't forget, Haas have had no upgrades this season. No upgrades, and they're still well in the fight. And I think when the cost cap kicks in towards the end of the season, when teams are really hurt and Haas could come back, I'm saying that out of optimism more than hope, because everyone wants to see the Gunther Steiner ship sail up the river, but, you know.
The actual ship, like the little toy boat that he was standing in front of?
Yeah, that actual one. I mean, that's probably that's Nikita Mazepin. Now that's the little reminder of what was.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. I will take it one step further than Aaron's prediction, and I will say that I don't think McLaren's in it at all. First of all, let's go back real quick. Alpine has 34 points. Ocon really has 32 of those 34 points.
I'm not mistaken.
That's wild.
That's mental.
I didn't know that at all. Do you mind double checking while we're gabbing here?
Esteban Ocon has 30 points. His teammate has 4 points.
Wow.
I apologize for getting
that. Wow, that's still crazy.
Could you imagine that across his stellar Formula One career, the legend of Formula One, Fernando Alonso, is outscored by two teammates, Lewis Hamilton and Esteban Ocon.
Mm,
that would be a wonderful scenario.
Oh, man. I don't want to see it because he's so damn good still. I don't know if anybody is better off the line on lap one than that guy.
No.
Maybe a Raikkonen, but he's not there anymore. Maybe a Kimi, but he's not there anymore. I think this is a battle between Alfa Romeo and Alpine, if anybody. And I want to say my gut leans toward Alpine a little bit more. I think Fernando's definitely going to end up scoring more points than that because that's wild. I thought he had at least 10. So that's pretty crazy. But I think at the end of the day, they're the team without the rookie. And at the end of the day, while Joe is performing pretty well, I think he's still a bit of a liability, if not because of his talent, but because of just his inexperience and how that might play into feedback with that car, as opposed to having two veterans in there.
What are you basing that on? Which retirement this season has been Guan Yuzhou's fault?
I'm not saying there's been retirements that are his fault. I'm saying all things being equal, if we've got two cars that are pretty similar, I'm probably going to bet on the car that doesn't have a rookie in one of them, is all I'm saying. Is his talent going to be that much of a detriment? No, but when you have two veterans as opposed to one veteran and a rookie, maybe that gives the team with two veterans a bit of an upper hand as far as what's going on with the car. But, you know, we'll see. I definitely think it's going to be a thing between them two.
Well, just a quick point, and this might be a fantastic place to jump off. He does have one more point all time than Mick Schumacher.
Blessed day.
Look, I'll let you guys take the lead on what you thought about Mick this race. Okay.
I'm going to let Aaron start because I think Aaron is the harshest critic, and then I am a critic, but I guess not to the extent, and then Andrew can plead the case for the defense.
I object. Overruled. Sustained. Sit down.
Aaron, sorry, please. Why do you think Mick Schumacher is a fraud?
He is still employed by this team to sell hats. Exclusively to sell hats. The Schumacher name is the only reason he has a drive. I don't think any of us are going to debate that. But
No, Formula 2 champion, man. That's harsh.
That was a Mickey Mouse championship. Honestly, he's been put in the situation multiple times to do well, and every time he messes it up. And like Miami, it was his best opportunity. He was 80% there and then just yeeted his car into the side of Sebastian Vettel. On this, he had the opportunity to, they put him on the slower plan because the only way he was going to be able to make overtakes would be through the pit lane. There was no chance that he's overtaking someone cleanly on track. He hasn't shown that he can, and I don't think that he will this season. I think that he's a bad driver, and Haas will probably have him out of the car next year.
Jesus.
Aaron, I disagree on the fact that, A, he's any sort of pay driver. I think any Formula 2 champion deserves a chance in F1. And I disagree on the fact that he's a bad driver fundamentally. You know, for me, he's got another half season to prove that he's not a bad driver. What I don't think can be argued is he's had a terrible season. And if the season was to end right now, he's done nothing to justify a seat in F1. You know, the strategy he was on this week was bad, and I'll give him that. But, I mean, he dropped 14 places, you know, from 6th to P14. He was getting passed in his first stint. That had nothing to do with strategy. And again, if this was his first time like this, I'd look past it. But you don't constantly get unlucky, constantly fall back, constantly lose the ability to defend from other cars. You know, he's getting passed by like Ricardo. Andrew, go on. The case for the defense.
We're done? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, look. Is he killing it? No. Is he driving lights out? No. But he has improved since last season. And as far as, let's just address the Aaron points. James, more or less, I agree with that. I don't agree with the case that he's a fraud. I think that's way too harsh. Do I think he's selling hats? No, because I also don't believe in Pizzagate. And two, why would you put a slower driver on a slower strategy? That it makes no sense at all. You're just going to make a slower driver slower? Absolutely not. They're in Formula One. They're going to give him the responsibility. Haas didn't call good strategy this weekend. They just didn't.
Yeah, that's fair.
They just didn't do it with Magnussen either. And they put by the way, they put Magnussen on hards a lap earlier than they pit Schumacher. And they ran Schumacher to the end on mediums. This is clearly a three-stop race, which what is this, 2012? But
nice, 2012.
And this is clearly a three-stop race. They ran Mick on a two-stopper. He got passed by just faster cars. Generally, he had a couple overtakes where do I think they were the most justified? No. Do I think they were understandable? Arguably, sure, I do. But you're talking about a car where it's already not great on tire strategy. I don't know what their setup was this weekend. But we know that definitely matters at this track. And you're talking about a car on mediums that were, you know, 20, 30 something laps old. And you've got cars approaching on softs that are way fresher than that, maybe half the life of that, at a track where the delta between those two compounds, even though they're the three hardest, which, by the way, side note, blew my mind that it was still a three-stop race with the three hardest compounds on the grid. But you're seeing a lot of difference between those tires and faster cars generally. So am I going to count the losing spots against him? No, because I don't know how much is him versus those tires. Do I think he's driving lights out? No. Do I think that Gunther definitely expects more of him this season? 100%, because I even saw him do that. I forgot to link y'all to a video, but I watched the video where Gunther was quoted as being a little disappointed. He probably wants to light a fire under his ass a little bit more. Does he deserve a seat this year? Definitely. Has he improved since last year? Definitely. Is he a great driver to work with? Is he super open and honest about his performance? Also, definitely. And I think if you ask him himself, he's going to be pretty straightforward about where he's at and needing to improve, which I think is a great quality. Granted, great qualities don't make you fast, but it definitely helps you get there a little bit easier. Now, what I did today is I asked the Discord at Midwest F1, hey, my two co-hosts hate Mick Schumacher and think he's a fraud. I think that might be a little too harsh. What do you guys say? And I deferred it to the jury here at Midwest F1. And we have a few quotes about Mick Schumacher's career and about what he's done so far. And let's go ahead and go through them right now. Hey, it's Clay from Midwest F1. He's going to get points at Monaco. I don't know about that, but hey, that's what he says. I think
he might get points on his license for committing traffic violations.
Not out of the realm of possibility, because if Haas is a better qualifier than a race car, which I forgot to mention previously, which I think is totally within the realm of possibility that we're looking at a Ferrari F2004 situation with a Haas, in that it's a qualifier car, might not have the race pace like the Alpine does, because Alpine's kind of the reverse situation where they've got
The number 20 car is a qualifying car.
That's true.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah, what a great qualifier car that is, of Mick Schumacher that gets into Q3 once all season.
Well, he was there.
He got into Q3 because Lando Norris's time was
deleted. Yeah, that's true.
he was still there, baby. He was still there. Hey, let's go through some more of these. GSR Ryan Rods, Midwest F1. He won F2, so he definitely has a right to be there. He does leave performance to be desired. He'll probably improve a lot during the season. Normally, it takes him a lot of time to get grips with a car, which is true. He has been known to have a bit of a learning curve with his cars. Is that the greatest quality? Absolutely not, but we'll see. I think it just at least lends to the fact that, is he a fraud? Maybe not, rather. Let's see. Alex Hewlett, I think fraud is way too strong of a word. He drove the worst car last year, but consistently outperformed Mazepin. Not the hardest thing to do, I know, but has to have a much improved car, but not quite a consistent top 10 finisher. I think he will get points this year. I think he will. He's still working to get grips with the car, and it's only a matter of time before he gets a good result. Upside is hanging around P10 for most of the races so far this year. And you know what? He is. He's hanging around P10. I don't know if that justifies him being a front.
But then to me, that's even more concerning. If you're always hanging around P10 and you have no points round six, what's gone on? You know,
it's definitely not ideal. It's definitely not ideal. I'm just saying he's not a fraud, you know?
I would like to just toss something in here real quick. Every single one of your lovely Midwest F1 friends, even the ones who've just been playing the game with a controller, could hop into that car last year and beat Nikita Mazepin.
Okay, not true. Okay, not true. I would love for that to be true. How awesome if that was actually true. I want that to be true, but we all know that's not true. Okay.
Well, a quick aside, guys, and I want you to know that this is one of the most egregious things I've ever heard. Chain Bear was interviewed on some other American-based podcast about Formula One that I was listening to the other day.
Not ours.
And he says that he thinks that Mazepin could have been in the W12 last year and scored a podium.
Wow.
I agree.
I unsubscribed.
Wow.
So that's a question, though, because I think like Mazepin is... I think go back a year, the W11, he 100% scores podiums. 100%.
How much would you pay to drive that? I would pay a lot of money. I would pay at least $20 to drive the W11. At least $20, you know?
I would be terrified to do it.
Oh, man. That looks so fun. We gotta at some point in the year, in season 7 of this podcast, we're going to all go to Silverstone and do that program where you can pay like $20,000 each to do like 15 laps in a 2012 F1 car. I don't know if you guys knew about this. Did you just throw that in the chat? Who just chatted? What's going on?
That was me.
Okay. Well, we're on a podcast. You don't have to chat. Oh. You could just say it. That's fine.
I like to chat. Woo! Like anyway, that chat.
Anyway, look, just to put a button on the segment, is Mick Schumacher, is he filling in his potential, his complete potential this year? No. Does he have more potential left in him? Yes. Well, I think we'll see. Do I think he's going to score points in Monaco? I don't know. But do I think he's going to score points in the next three races? Yes. I think he's going to have some points on the board. And just lastly, I think we're underrating Magnussen's skill as well. I think we're talking about a driver that's got a new lease on life coming back. Didn't think he was going to be driving. Was put in a fairly competitive car after driving pretty bad Haas cars for years. I think the guy has a lot of performance that has been kind of overlooked, because he's driven in an era with so many superstars. And I think this guy's a way better driver than he gets credit for. And that's definitely worth considering. 10 years experience over two is always worth considering, especially when it comes to an era where you're driving on tires that are basically like chalk. So, I think the guy's got a little bit of experience under his belt. I think that might explain for some of this difference in pace. 7/10, I don't know.
Hey, this is a very pro Mag podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, very, very pro. But I mean, we look at the comparison there. It's either Kevin Magnussen is getting way more out of a dog shit car, or the car is decent and Mick Schumacher is incapable of driving it.
I think it's both. I think it's out of interest then, Andrew. And I think that me calling him a fraud is a little bit.
That's mostly tongue in cheek.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I couldn't see him. You know, I could see him popping in a P7 at Monaco and turning it around mid-season. You know, a P10 maybe. And I see no reason why he can't turn his career around. That's the thing. I'm not saying his career. I wouldn't get rid of him tomorrow. But when's your cutoff for him? When is your? He has to start performing well, matching Magnussen, or at least getting close to Magnussen. By XYZ, because this can't go on forever.
Spa.
There we go. There it is, ladies and gentlemen.
I give him till Spa. If he's not showing marked improvement by Spa, I think then it's time to have a decent discussion. I don't know if I'm ever going to call him a fraud, because I don't know if I could call any F2 champion a fraud and F3. But do I think he's his dad? But here's the deal. Do I think he's his dad? Absolutely not.
No.
Even though Michael Schumacher raced in a different era with different cars, you're still talking about a guy that could jump in any car and somehow drag that up to the front, seemingly with superpowers. You just never knew how this guy did it. And is so Izzy his dad? No. But is he Ralph? No. I don't think he's Ralph either. I think when it comes out in the wash, when all is said and done, I think he's going to fall probably somewhere in between Ralph and Michael. Unless
was
I'm
Ralph
missing.
Fired?
I mean, I don't know what was the gap there. That should actually that'd be interesting to look up. So hey, is Ralph bad? Email us armchairapex@gmail.com.
That's the next episode. I'm defending Ralph Schumacher here. Justice for Ralph.
armchairapex@gmail.com. Aaron, the email address was available, by the way. So
we actually have that.
James, I don't know if you caught that on the last episode. But I started asking people to email us on an email address that I hadn't even made yet. So I was just like, hope it exists, because otherwise going to be some weird emails going to whoever owns armchairapex@gmail.com. But also, if you own that and you're not into racing, what are you doing? So anyway, to be continued on the Mick saga, we will see.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our new segment, Hot Take Corner. It's the hottest corner since turn 14, 15, 16, 17 of COTA. Your front rights are going to be overheating from the hotness of these takes. And I will go first. We will have 30 seconds to put forward our best hot takes. And then there will be a poll on our Twitter accounts to vote for the best one. And we'll keep a league table throughout the season of who wins the Hot Takes Championship.
Hot takes.
Are you ready for my hot take?
One. Hot takes.
I'm pulling up a timer. Are you ready?
I'm born ready.
30 seconds on the clock.
Carlos Sainz, as we all know, has underperformed for Ferrari. Charles Leclerc is going nowhere. He has a contract to the end of time. They need to replace Sainz. Who do they go for? Norris is on a long-term contract. Gasly is staying in the Red Bull. There's no other promising youngster. You need someone connected to Ferrari. Who is there to be a backup? Kevin Magnussen. He's too consistent. He is more than happy. He'd be appreciative of the time. He wouldn't mind playing number two to Max. And Red Bull will win the Constructors' Championship with Kevin Magnussen.
Wow, so Giovinazzi to Haas?
I still think there's a greater than 0% chance that Hamilton ends up in a Ferrari at some point.
Oh, that'd be cool.
That would be cool.
That'd be really cool.
Man.
Lewis in red. Scarlet red.
Lewis in red.
Right.
Is dancing with me.
Ladies and gentlemen, Andrew Dalton.
Hot takes.
You ready?
No, it's your corner now.
I'm not even going to take the entire 30 seconds. I think Daniel Ricciardo is washed as shit. He's going to end up in the United States driving NASCAR or IndyCar next year. NASCAR, and I don't even care.
I've seen hotter things in Antarctica, mate. I mean, that's that is a terrible hot take corner. That's just... Oh, yeah, my hot take is that Senna was good. Next question. Senna.
Wow, dude, you sound like those girls on Twitter that have like 80,000 followers for saying Lewis Hamilton is fast. You know what I'm saying? James, did you see me trying to argue with you on our own Twitter account?
Yeah, I got to a point. I was like, am I trying to ratio myself?
Yeah,
I was thinking of tweeting as me and then tweeting as you something stupid so I could then tweet you and own you from myself. But,
I think we need to figure that out. Definitely. How do we argue with ourselves on one Twitter account? I think we're just going to have to make do with the fact that we're going to look as a schizophrenic while we do it. But I don't know how to do it because like when you sign off of a tweet with your name, you just look like a grandparent texting your grandkid.
That's true.
Like, hey, just wanted to let you know, left the back door open, love you, grandpa. And you're just like, grandpa, you don't need to tweet, you don't need to sign off on texts, grandpa. That's not how that works. Listen, hot take, don't even need the whole 30 seconds either. I don't think Formula One would miss Spa. I don't think it would miss Spa. I don't think adding these tracks and with the options we have at this point, if we nicked Spa from the calendar, I don't think Formula One would miss it that much because we know Monaco isn't going anywhere for the money it pulls out. What is this?
You might be right.
What is this, speed with Keanu Reeves? Get off the bus. I'm gonna do an explosion soundboard there. We gotta do an explosion.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
We'll do some explosions. That's
good. And I do think it would be fun to have did Mick score a point? And then we're like, no. And then we move right on in the hot take corner.
And then the day he does, it's gonna be a good today was a good day.
Or what about, sorry, you know that meme that's like, babe, wake up. It's like Bay, wake up, another dog shit performance from Mick Schumacher.
Yeah. Oh, like, man. It was all a dream.
I have the Twitter account. Can Valtteri Bottas still mathematically win the WDC?
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. I'm just waiting for the day that I tweet no.
Of course you would. Of course you would. Oh, man. So jealous of Aaron going to see Valtteri Bottas in the flesh. And that's not a reference to his Instagram photo. In Montreal in 2 weeks. We're going to have to give us a little rundown after you get home from that.
Absolutely. But I don't think we should jump that far ahead just yet, because we do have a race coming up this weekend. And it is the most boring one on the calendar.
Monaco. The Monaco Grand Prix.
The Monaco Grand Prix.
The Monaco Grand Prix.
The Tax Haven Grand Prix.
Yeah, the Tax Haven Grand Prix, the Epstein Grand Prix. Have you guys seen the guy going over all of the F1 games over the year? And every time it gets to Monaco, he says Monaco. Oh, so blood red mad. Just want to – I don't even know who that kid is. I'm sure he's like 15. Still want to just maybe throw him through a plate glass window. Monaco, you know, just no. I'm excited. I was looking at something I sent y'all earlier. Good chance of rain Sunday. Want it to rain so bad. Oh. Let's toss it up. Let's do the full wets. Want to see some puddles on the track, man. Let's do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think our best shot of Monaco being a good race is the new tire models. I think, like, if there's, like, let's imagine it's a two-stop race, but someone drags out a one-stop and they are so much slower than everyone else, but they're just about holding everyone back. I think that could be really interesting. Yeah. You know, you're never going to get lots of overtakes in Monaco, but that's fine. You know, as long as you can get a few, I'm going to say at roughly 3:48 in the afternoon on Sunday, I'm going to hear Mr. Pete Bonington say, get in there, Lewis.
Ooh, wow.
Oh, all right. Well, let's do it. What's your, James, since you've already alluded to it, what's your podium for Monaco?
I'm going to say it's the best British performance in France since D-Day. I'm going to say it's Lewis Hamilton, it's George Russell, and it's Carlos Sainz.
Chuck Verstappen, Russell. I'll go Russell, P3 again.
Verstappen, Hamilton, Bottas.
You've got to get Bottas in. Dude, rash.
Watch Valtteri have the same pit stop issue this season with a completely different car and crew. Like, somehow they're still just like, I can't get the tire off. Like,
it cuts back to the wheel gunman, like, pulls his helmet off, and it's Toto Wolff.
it cuts to the wheel gunman as Toto Wolff, and then it cuts back to the track after Valtteri is stuck in the pits again. It cuts back to the track again, and somehow Carlos Sainz is on the beach. You're just like, oh, come on, man. Again, bro? Like, dude, Carlos Sainz isn't even on the beach. He's on the hotel embankment above the hairpin. Somehow he just ended up there. It's like, bro, come on, man.
I think somewhere deep, dark in, like, the Mercedes HQ, somewhere near, like, Stoffel Van Dorn's bedroom, you can still find that W12 with one wheel stuck on. There's one intern that's just been working at it for a year trying to get it off. It's the longest pit stop in history because it took about 12 days.
As always, if you guys want to get in touch with us, you got any questions, comments, concerns, armchairapex@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, armchair_apex, I believe, and the Instagrams at the same handle. Search Armchair Apex and any of these platforms, you will find us. And our horrible, horrible memes. Actually, Aaron, we got to put you in charge of memes for the Instagram.
I love memes.
We got to put you in charge of that.
Speaking of memes, what lap is Latifi retiring this week?
After the race, he's retiring from F1. Ooh, yeah. that's it.
Yeah.
Forced. I don't know if it's called retiring if you're forced out of the.
It is retiring, like how people in the mafia used to get sent on holiday forever. You know.
The concrete.
I'm riding 12 until he does it.
Just lap 12. At some point, you'll be right. 38. Lap 38.
38.
Until next time. Guys, James, thanks for joining me. Aaron, thanks for joining us. RIP. What's the RIP for this week?
The RIP is going to be Sainz not receiving team orders.
RIP Signs not receiving team orders. RIP Signs not on a beach. Ladies and gentlemen, we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.